Hello and welcome to this week's message from Ed Carter, Senior Pastor of Valley Church. Catch up on more messages and hear the latest from Valley Church online at valleychurch.eu/messages or download them from iTunes. For more information about what's going on in the life of our church, visit valleychurch.eu. Enjoy the message.
Well, if you have a Bible or your smartphone, we're going to have a look at Luke chapter 16. I'm just going to literally share one or two thoughts from Luke chapter 16. It's the story, a parable that Jesus tells about a dishonest manager. It says in verse 8 of chapter, a dishonest manager. Now, there's a clue in what Jesus calls the guy. He calls him a dishonest manager, i.e. we're not supposed to copy what the manager does, but there is something we can learn. Does that make sense? Because sometimes you go, oh, well, Jesus said this dishonest manager did this, so therefore we should read it. No, he's a dishonest manager. So I want to read it with that kind of rider. I'm also going to read it in one of my favorite translations, which is the New King James Version. Now, for those of you who go to Bible college, however many of those that are, or listen to this, the New King James Version, brilliant. It's the most literal translation from the Greek and Hebrew. So if you want to know what a Greek verse says in English as close as possible, this is the book, the translation to you. So I'm going to read the story from this version. So it might look a little bit different from your NIVs or whatever version you're using. It says like this. So we're in Luke chapter 16, verse 1. So Jesus said to his disciples, there was a certain rich man who had a steward, a worker, somebody who was responsible for his things and responsible to him. And an accusation was brought to him that this man was wasting his goods or stealing his goods. So he called him to himself and said, what is this that I hear about you? Give me an account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be a steward. Basically, I'm about to fire you. You need to kind of do all the sums ready for the end of your stay here. So the steward said within himself, what shall I do? For my master is taking this stewardship, my job, away from me. I cannot dig, and I'm ashamed to beg, so I'm in trouble. Basically, he enjoyed doing what he's doing, and he didn't want anything else. He says, so I have resolved what to do, that when I am put out of stewardship, that many may receive me into their houses. So he formed a plan. So he called every one of his master's debtors to him. Remember, he's still in control at this stage. To him, and says at first, how much do you owe my master? He said, 100 measures of oil. Now, that's a few hundred trees worth. I think it's about 450 trees worth, if I remember my research properly. 450 trees worth. And so he said, take your bill, sit down quickly, and write 50. Very dishonest. And then he said to another, and how much do you owe? So he said, 100 measures of wheat. So he said to him, take your bill and write 80. And so he went on and did this. And so the master, when he found out, commended the unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. And Jesus is saying, you know, there's a lot of people who follow God who are just idiots with their stuff. That's what he's trying to say. And I'll come on to that in a bit. And so I say to you, Jesus says, so I say to you, make friends for yourselves with unrighteous mammon, that when you fall, that you may receive, that they may receive you into an everlasting home. He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much, and he who is unjust in what is least is also unjust in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, then who will commit to your trust true riches? And if you've not been found faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will love the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Now, I've done it in that translation, because in most of your translations, the word mammon is translated as riches or money, which is a reasonable translation. But mammon was, we think, and I put a thing here, a god of the ancient Assyrians or Babylonians. It was the god of riches. And so what Jesus is saying is, people, you can either worship riches or worship God. And you have to pick. But I'll come on to that in a second. The first thing I think that Jesus is trying to say in this passage is this: you need to hear clearly. Because among Christians, if this is your first time in church, you don't have this problem. But if you're a Christian, you've been a Christian for a while, you might have this issue in your life. And this is the first thing Jesus is trying to say. Money, stuff, provision in itself is not evil. It's just stuff. It's just stuff, right? The money you have, the possession you have, it's just stuff. What you do with it could be evil or could be good, right? It could be one or the other. It depends what you're doing. Paul writes in 1 Timothy chapter 6 to his spiritual son, Timothy, who's leading one of his churches. He says this, 1 Timothy 6 verse 10. It says, "For the love of money is a root," not the root, "a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and peed themselves with many griefs." It's not the money that's a problem, it's the love of it and the pursuing of it, which is the problem. The love of it is the problem. But it's obvious, I think, to me and to you, this fact. If you have a lot of money, you can do a lot of good, right? With a lot of money, you can do a lot of bad. What's equally as true, if you don't have any money, well, you can't do either, right? You can't do good or bad because you don't have it. So if you have nothing, you're really struggling to do good, at least with your money. Time, love, other things, your other resources. But actually, you can't do any good. Therefore, Christians, I believe, and you should be praying for God to bless you with finance. I think you should. I think that's a good prayer. As long as your heart's right, as long as you love God and not the riches, as long as you want to do good with the riches that God gives you, want to honor him, I think every Christian is saying, "God, bless me with finance." Because without that, you can't bless other people. You can't bless the bride of Christ, the church. You can't do what God has called you to do to fully extent without finance. And I've met lots of Christians who struggle with that concept. But I just want to say straight up from the front here that I believe that riches are neutral and riches in the right hands do immeasurably good. And I believe that Christians are the right hands for the finances to flow into, because then God and we can use it for incredible good, for both his glory and for the world. Does that make sense? And I want to encourage you to pray. I mean, I'm not promising you that God will pour millions into your lap, but we should pray and ask, so that we may do good, we may fulfill all that God has given to us. It also means that we should be really happy with Christians who are wealthy. We're not called to judge them. But we should be happy that people who love God have money. Because why should the world have all the money and do bad stuff? Why not Christians have money and do good stuff? Does that make sense? I just want to say that. You see, but remember to keep your heart right. Because I'm believing and praying for some of you younger ones who dream, and I want to tell you, dream businesses and stuff. I'm believing that God's going to bless you, not just the millions, but tens of millions, so that you can invest in the kingdom, just do some amazing, great things. But make sure that your heart is kept right. The world, our culture, society tells us a lie about money. And this is the lie: if you have money, you'll have significance, you'll have security, you'll have great identity if you have money. If you have money, that you'll have happiness. The reason the world says that you're not happy is you don't have enough stuff, enough money. You know that's a lie, right? You know that's a lie. But so many Christians fall for it, and they strive for more first rather than striving for God. It's even kind of hinted that if you have money, people will love you more. That's also a lie. Can I say to you that only God and the pursuit of him can give you those things that your heart really needs? Only God can truly reveal your identity. Only he can give you security both in this age and in the age to come. Only he can give you significance and purpose that will supersede this life and give you true meaning. Only God can give you happiness that will last a lifetime, a joy that will last a lifetime. Only God can love you the way that you need loving. And you can actually only love other people once you've received that properly, truly, as you receive his love into your lives. The second thing I think this passage is saying is this: So Jesus commends, his boss commends this unrighteous servant for being wise with what he has, because he's kind of trying to set up his future. And they're commending him because he's thinking through what he's doing with his things. You see, I believe that God loves those that think through how they're using their resources. He loves those. I mean, he loves us all right, but he loves those who think through how they're using their resources. And that means finance, or time, or love, or possessions, everything. And it's only as we think through and use our resources, our finance for God, that God will give us more treasures. It says in this passage, true riches. God will give us true riches in, didn't write the verse down, whatever the verse number is. And I don't know about you, I want to have true riches in my life. I think true riches are people, they're not stuff. And God blesses with people in our lives when we honor what God has already given us. And I want to be practical in this particular section. And as you're taking notes, I think we need to actually think through wisely and plan what we do with our resources. So our time, do you plan how you use your time? Or does it happen randomly? Do you plan? Do you have a diary? And do you think, well, you know, I want to really bless the church, I want to bless my family, I want, obviously, got time and, you know, for work and all that kind of stuff. But do you think through how you're using your time? I hear from time to time issue my staff time sheets. They love filling them in. It's one of their joys of life. Every time I say to Dave, it's time we did some time sheets, Dave's face lights up. Pastor Dave goes like, oh, Ed, I just love putting down what I'm doing every 5 minutes in my life. It's a pleasure and a joy. And isn't it, Dave? You liar. And but it's good from time to time to assess how you're using your time. And for those of you who've never done it, I want to challenge you, because God expects you to kind of think through your resources and how you use them. It's actually just to do a simple spreadsheet or something, or even on a piece of paper. And every 5 minutes, write what you do. I was eating food, I was doing this, doing that. It's amazing what happens when you do it. Well, the first thing you do is you'll start cheating. Because normally you do something, but you know you're recording, so you won't do it, you'll do something good. Yeah? You know, and it's amazing. I'm saying how people's time with God improve if they're doing a timesheet. Because then they go, well, I better spend some time doing God today because it's going on my timesheet. And it's amazing what happens when you do it. And because as you begin to think through, you use it more wisely. What about your stuff? Is your stuff being used well for God and for other people? And I think when you think through that, I was listening to a speaker yesterday, and he tells this story. It's a great story. The speaker was a youth worker for a while, and he lives in California. And they used to take youth teams into Mexico, because it's just across the border. Yes, I like Alex's face, a bit scary, but they used to take them into Mexico to do things, to fix up homes or churches or do missions or something. And one particular trip, he had 86 16 to 18-year-olds, which were going to go into Mexico. And they paid their things. It was all organized. It was all sorts. But he didn't have any transport. And the church couldn't afford to buy a minibus, or they didn't want to afford a bus. And the plan was they were going to borrow cars. Remember, they start to learn to drive at 16. So there'd be lots of people could drive by the time they got 18, right? So they're going to borrow cars. So the youth leaders stood up in front of the congregation and said, you know, we've got this amazing trip, it's going to be awesome, and some of your children are going, and it's going to be great. We just need to borrow a few cars so that we can make the trip happen. Is that all right? Right? And he stood down, and do you know how many people offered their cars for these 16 to 18-year-olds to take to Mexico for a week or two? Do you want to guess? None. Absolutely none. There was nobody. And it was, as it's understandable, right? Who would trust their 17, 18-year-old with their car to Mexico and back? I mean, I'm not sure I would. Because my Johnson's already had two crashes. Already. Amazing. And he's only been driving a year. Two crashes. I mean, you wouldn't. You go like, nah, my car's going to come back damaged. Right? It's not happening. So this usually is a bit desperate, right? So he went to talk. He says, I went to talk to an old, rather gnarly guy who would always be able to seem to get stuff. And he said, do you think you can stand up next week and say something? He said, Oh, yes. I can. So he, next week, the youth leader kind of pushes him on. And he says to the church, church, we are so blessed in a few weeks. And you guys have been so generous. We are sending as a church 86 precious young people to Mexico. And they're going to go and serve Jesus there and serve the people there. It's going to be absolutely awesome. You know, people, children are our most precious resource that we have. And we love them to bits. We just, you know, if above all things that we have, are children the most valuable things, right? And he's like, yeah, that's right. He said, but some of you won't lend your cars to them. Because your cars, you'll risk your children, but you won't risk your cars for Jesus. And the youth leader would like you to take them through to Mexico and go off the stage. And the youth leader said, it was amazing how many cars they got. He got more than enough. He said, it was some kind of Mercedes, twin seater Mercedes. He said, I took that myself and drove it to make sure it was all right. But I just share that story because I thought, actually, that's often how we feel. You can't have that, you might damage it. Great, you might damage it. It's only a thing. And it's us. It's God gives it us to bless other people to take his kingdom forward, right? Would you think through our resources? Are we using them well? Our budgets, our money, are we giving that appropriately? But there's been lots been said about that already. Are we loving a few or do we love everybody in our lives? Would you think through how we're using our resources? And that's what Jesus is trying to say here. The unrighteous steward thought about how he would use everything he had for his future. And we as Christians must be even more diligent thinking through how we use our things, both for now and for investing in for all eternity. The final thing Jesus says this, and he says this at the end of Luke chapter 6, in verse 13, he says, no servant can serve two masters. Either he will hate one and love the other, or will be devoted to one and despise the other. You can't serve both God and money, or God and mammon. You have to pick one. And at the end of this series, I wanted to ask the question, have you chosen to serve God before everything else in your life, especially your riches? You see, I believe that God wants to bless you. He wants to bless you primarily with his presence. The greatest gift God gives us is himself. You know, I love doing life with God. I'd sacrifice everything to do life with God because I would not want to live life without relationship with him for the hope and eternity he's placed in my heart. He is the greatest gift, the greatest blessing that we have. He just is, right? And if you don't understand that, Pastor Dave will jump at the end and give you a chance to meet God for the first time and encounter him and begin that relationship with him. But he gives more than that. He blesses us with human relationships. And God has blessed Michelle and I with some incredible human relationships, and he wants to do the same to you. God blesses with hope and joy and peace and all the things that we need internally as we follow him. He blesses us with health and finances. Have you chosen to live in that blessing? But along with that choice, God calls us to purpose. God calls us to purpose. There was a young girl, we don't know how old she was, called Esther. And there's a book named after her in the Bible called Esther. And Esther was in captivity, but a very loose captivity. She was just away from home. She had freedom. She was just in a foreign city. And her life was good. Her family were well off, and they'd done well in their foreign city. And she was living a good life, and she was very beautiful, very pretty. And, you know, her future was good. And but she was a Jew, and the Jews in this period of history were hated by some of the rulers of the time. And a guy called Mordecai, one of the princes of the land, hated the Jews particularly. And so he persuaded the king to issue a decree that at such and such a day, he would be allowed to slaughter every single Jew across the entire empire that the emperor ruled over. And obviously the Jews got a bit worried, a bit scared, and prayed and walked about in sackcloth and ashes. And Esther, by this stage in her life, had been chosen possibly to be a queen. and then had become a queen. And because she was beautiful and handsome and everything was great in her life. And her life was almost, as it were, perfect. But her uncle, a Jew called Mordecai, said, did I say that before? The bad prince was called Haman or Heman. And he sent a message to her and said, look, this decree's been issued. You need to do something about it. And she kind of gave the impression that, well, she couldn't do much, so never mind, and she was saved because she was queen. And Mordecai sent a message back, and I want to read this message to you. So all the Jews are under condemnation. When Esther's words were reported back to Mordecai, he sent back this answer. Do not think because you're in the king's house that you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. But you and your father's family will perish. And then he says this, and who knows? But that you have come to a royal position for such a time as this. You see, I've loved giving this series. I've loved hearing it and preparing it because it's reminded me of the generosity of God and how I get to be that, reflect that character in my life. But it's also reminding me that God blesses us for a purpose. God blesses you for a purpose. And this series, as much as it's about helping each one of us walk into an amazing life with Jesus, it's actually also designed to help us understand that we have purpose. And that everything that God gives you is for the purpose of giving him glory and doing good for the world. And I believe that Esther was created, positioned for that moment in history. And I believe this one, that each one of you are where you are on purpose. And God has a mission, a purpose for you to do that only you can fulfill in this moment. And that the blessing that God is pouring in your life and will pour in life is to fulfill that purpose. As I finish this message, my prayer is that each one of you be blessed, but this is my bigger prayer, that you would use all that God has given you for his purpose, that you may fulfill the purpose of God in your life. And as you do that, each one of us, I know each one of us will experience like never before, greater blessing from God. As our heart and our passion is for his purposes and his purposes alone.
Thanks for listening to this week's message. Why not follow us on Twitter at @valley_church or come visit us at one of our locations on a Sunday. To find out more, visit valleychurch.eu. Have a great week.